Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Playbook for week number 3 here on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Welcome into the playbook for a Tuesday, and we finally have a win to talk about. It did take us 2 weeks to get there, but there is a win to talk about today. So that's got to be the first thing on the agenda. As you well know, this being Nitpick Tuesday, that actually is what Andy said, and I don't agree with him often, but he's actually right. What better day is there to talk about a win and still getting plenty of nitpicks at the same time? For those of you that, you know, like to bitch and moan and complain and look between the lines for the stories and all that kind of stuff, well, this is the show for you. This is the perfect opportunity to let your feelings be known. There are plenty of nitpicks, not the least of which would start with the myriad penalties that occurred on the football field on Sunday. That was my one and overriding only nitpick, writing on Patriots.com earlier in the View from Above column today. So that's where we'll start. But there are other things as I've come across, and actually in retrospect, now that I've given it an extra day or so to sort of consider all of this, I don't believe overall that we need to panic. I don't really think that there's any cause for great overt concern. Those that are saying that the offense is maligned now and what's wrong with the passing game and receivers not getting open and Brady, you know, targeting certain receivers and not targeting others, you know, I'm not willing to go there yet simply because I just don't think there's enough of a sampling. I mean, this team emphasized, Paul said it earlier, this team emphasized the run this last week. Did it pretty well because they wanted to get back to a physical mindset, and I feel like that was something that was accomplished. So, you know, now if they had split it 50-50 between run and pass, then maybe I'd be a little bit more willing to take on that argument right now. But for guys not being on the field and guys not getting open and where's Brandon LaFell and how come Danny Amendola's not doing well, I'm not buying that just yet. Not buying it just yet. You're going to have to give this a little more time before you say, okay, you know, Foxborough, we have a problem. That's kind of where I sit on this issue. To look back at the win, the 30-7 win over the Vikings, and also pick it apart, nitpick-wise, Jeff Howe of the Boston Herald, who's covered the Patriots for the last several years, not only for the Boston Herald, but previous to that, he had worked, I think it was for Nesson.com, right?
Yeah, he was a UMass journalism classmate of mine.
Really? Oh,
just
so you...
Like Jeff
so you,
and me and Mark Bertrand and Dan Duggan, who wrote for the Herald.
So you like guys were all in the same J classes?
A little bit of a dream team, John.
Wow. What happened to you?
I don't know. That's what they keep asking. Kind of the runt of the litter, as
wow.
They say.
Wow. Well, that's pretty good, though. So at least you were able to rely on some of your connections to get us an interview.
Yeah, it's nice because, of course, when you're in college, you never think of those type of things because you never know where you're going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
But maintaining those friendships is definitely a good thing.
I agree. It's all about networking, especially in this business. It's all about networking.
Are any of your college classmates still alive?
Oh! Let me get that out of my heart.
Sorry, you know I love you.
Yes, I know.
Bust my chops about
actually,
my hair.
Actually, no, that's a fair assessment because of the guys that I went to school with in the late 70s and early 80s at Texas, right off the top of my head, I don't know if anybody is still in this business actively. I have one good friend of mine who wrote on the Daily Texan staff with me, and he handles public relations and tournament stuff for the Colonial and on the PGA Tour. Other than that, I'm not sure who specifically is really engaged in, shall we say, journalism or communications full-time. I'm sure there are others, but I just don't know them. and I would have lost track of them. The other, so Jeff Howe's going to join us here in 5-10 minutes. We will also hear from Eric Friends, who's one of those younger guys that's up and coming and has been writing for the last couple of years for a couple of blogs. Most notably, has now been hired by Boston.com to blog on all things Patriots and the AFC East. And Eric Friends will join us at the top of the 3 o'clock hour this afternoon as well. I think in this particular instance, it's always great to get different perspective. So one of the things we're going to do on Tuesdays, on Nitpick Tuesdays, here in the playbook, is try to get some perspective from those guys that you read or you listen to or you watch on TV that talk about the Patriots. And we'll try to rotate this in and amongst members of the Patriots media who cover this football team, because I think it's interesting and I think it's important that we get perspective. I've always told you, and I've maintained from day one, that's my goal in this program, is to give you a perspective, obviously, A, where you cannot get anywhere else, but B, just so if you're thinking one way, I want to enter another train of thought into your consciousness so you can see all sides, or at least a couple of sides of the story. Then, of course, you can make your own decisions from that. But it's my job to sort of educate, as well as hopefully do a little entertaining. And that's what we hope to do here. And so we're going to give some of the Patriots beat writers, if you will, an opportunity, to do just that with you and for you here, primarily, not always, but primarily on Nitpick Tuesdays. So, both Jeff and Eric are still to come here on the program today. If you have questions for either one of these reporters, please know that anytime we bring a guest on and I can get the information out to you in advance, and usually I tweet it out or put it up on Facebook, the day of a show, the morning of a show, your questions are welcome. Your questions are welcome. I will ask them, you know, with your name in mind, or if you want it anonymously, whatever, but I will certainly ask the questions if you have something specific for any of our guests here in the playbook. That is always a given here on this program, in case you didn't know. So the way you get in touch with us is 855-PATS-500. Toll free, 855-PATS-500. Email is webradio@patriots.com. Hit me up on Twitter, @JRBroadcaster. If you want to tweet something out for one of these guys as well, we'll give you their Twitter handles when they appear on the program. You can also hit me up on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E, is the last name. And if you haven't become a friend, you can submit the friend request, and then we'll answer that. And then you, of course, can post and or chat during the programs on the Facebook page, and we'll go that route. Okay? So a couple of things about the game. I would say first and foremost, first and foremost, we didn't have any winners. No one picked 30-7 as the final score last week. So because of that, we'll push to next week, and we'll do prediction Thursday this week on the Patriots and Oakland Raiders. It's a little weird, is it not, to have a home game debut in week 3 of the regular season? See, this is going to be one of those early season things that nobody's really talking about now because of all the off-field controversy that's going on, and I am going to touch on that here in a couple of moments. But for a team not to be at home until the third week of the season is highly unusual, especially when you start the first two on the road. Now, I could see having two of the first three on the road. I can see that. That happens. So it's really tough for me to hear some people say, all right, the NFL favors New England. That has never been the case. I'm not sure it will ever be the case. To me, that's just kind of ridiculous. There are some other instances, of course, that can scream or talk about favoritism, and I'm sure we'll probably hit on a couple of those as time progresses here. One of the things, though, that we do want to look back on, we want to get your nitpicks. We want to get your thoughts on Sunday's game and the win over the Vikings. How much of a factor do you feel like Adrian Peterson's missing really played into New England's game plan? See, my initial thought about the game plan was, considering that they wanted to get back to a physical nature of the game, as witnessed by their penchant for running the football, it tells me that they wanted to keep the ball out of the hands of the Minnesota offense as much as they possibly could and force Minnesota to become what, gang? One-dimensional. I'm assuming everybody said that at once because we've talked about being one-dimensional, and that's what this team wants you to do. That's how they attack you defensively. They try to make you one-dimensional on offense. And so because of that, if you can establish the run, establish the line of scrimmage, chew up the clock, and get a lead on the road, you're going to force the other team to do something it might not necessarily want to do. And I thought that was mission one and mission accomplished on Sunday in Minnesota. But I'm sure there are other things that you'll look at as well, and we want you to contribute your nitpicks. 855-PATS-500, webradio at patriots.com. Couple of questions of the day as well, but first let's get to Jeff Howe, who covers the Patriots for the Boston Herald. Jeff, thanks so much for spending a couple of moments with us today. It's greatly appreciated.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Let's start with your thoughts then on the way the Patriots emphasized the run on Sunday and whether or not you thought that that was a necessary tool to kind of get back to where this team sort of fancies itself, envisions itself maybe for the long haul. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they got way too far away from the running game in the second half against the Dolphins when they essentially just didn't run it at all. There was no effort to stick with the run. They weren't running it on first down. They weren't running it on the first play of the series. It just, there was, and allowed the front four to tee off. It allowed the back seven to clog up all the passing lanes over the middle that Brady likes to pick apart at. And there was, I think, not even trying to run played into a great part of their demise offensively against the Dolphins. I don't think they were overly successful in the running game in terms of yards per carry. I mean, right, they did a good job, especially as the game went on. And the final numbers are really nice with 25 for 101 for Ridley. But just the fact that they were trying to run the ball helped them so much more. It made the Vikings respect play action. And again, it forced the linebackers to have to fear the rushing repercussions that the Dolphins didn't have to worry about. It didn't allow the front four to tee off, and I mean all that stuff. It was huge, and again, it didn't need to be overly successful. They didn't need 5, 6, 7 yards a carry in order to have a great running game. They just needed to be balanced, and they were a whole lot more balanced, and that's why I think you saw a little more efficiency offensively than what you got. You got zero efficiency in the second half against the Dolphins, and again, sticking with the run was a big reason.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing was, and we've kind of danced around this for a couple of weeks now, but, you know, just kind of bringing it up here, this team got away from a physical mentality. And one of the things was against Miami, they got punched in the mouth, particularly in that second half where they were dominated on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And I think they just decided, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to set the tone. We're going to set a standard. And even if that means that, you know, we kind of get away from doing what we think we do best, we need to make sure that we create this for ourselves, not only now, but again, as you talked about, perhaps setting the table for later on down the line, not next week, not the week after, but maybe even in November and December, a physical mindset. In other words, the ability to be able to run when we need to run the most.
Well, I mean, it also just comes down to better execution on both sides of the line. And running the ball obviously helps the offensive linemen get into more of a rhythm. They'll admit that 100 times out of 100. Nate Solder said it yesterday, and it's just important. And I think that's why you saw the offensive line play a whole lot better, too. They weren't on their heels the whole time in pass protection. But on the other side of the line, too, I mean, they won one-on-one battles, and that was important. They were just losing too many of those battles at the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, and that's why I think they were just thoroughly dismantled in the second half against the Dolphins. I don't know if physicality played a part in it, or, you know, it's not like they were going out there and trying to play meaner. I don't think they were overly passive. I think it was just a matter of execution and winning the assignment, and they didn't do it against the Dolphins all the way across the board, and they did a whole lot better of a job of it against the Vikings, again, on both sides of the line of scrimmage, and that's why I think you saw one lopsided score one week and a lopsided score in the other direction the other week.
Sure. All right, so then taking all of this into consideration and a big 23-point win, of which the defense certainly helped with 4 picks, 6 sacks, and the special teams with a blocked field goal return for a touchdown, why was Tom Brady so upset?
Well, I mean, the offense, they only had, what, 6 points in the second half.
Yep.
I think they've scored 37 or 34 of their 50 points this season have been the direct result of turnovers. Three of their 4 touchdowns this season, the offensive touchdowns, have been the direct result of turnovers. So they're just not creating enough on their own. And I think Brady Well, he said it a couple times now already. He's happy they won the game, and that's an important part of it. But I think he knows if they bring this sort of, if they are going into the playoffs operating at this sort of level, they're going to be a quick exit. And this team isn't about winning 12 or 13 games in the regular season anymore as much as they are about trying to win that fourth Super Bowl. So he wants it to be at a Super Bowl caliber, and anything less than that. And offensively, I'm not sure they were even at a playoff caliber. And it needs to be more balanced. I think he knows that the running game needs to be more efficient. And again, I think running success in terms of yards per carry is different than going out there and actually running the ball. I think there are two different levels of success there. I think they went out and ran the ball, or at least were dedicated to the running game, which is important, but they can be better at it. And I think the offensive linemen can create more holes.
Sure.
Side of it, Rob Gronkowski, I mean, clearly still isn't himself, and he's relying too much on Julian Edelman. That's not a bad thing. I mean, it's not Edelman's fault that he's getting open as often as he is. Brady's completing 80% of his passes when he throws it at Edelman, and you can't really argue there, but he's overlooking Dobson and Amendola and other guys, Vereen, who are open and missing some chances. So I think he just realizes that ultimately it was good for Sunday, but it wasn't good for January.
Sure, absolutely. I would agree with that. Jeff Howe, the Boston Herald, covers the Patriots, joining us here in the playbook. Would you agree or disagree with the fact that the penalties may have a lot to do with the unhappiness on offense, whether it's Tom Brady or, you know, Josh McDaniels or Bill Belichick or the entire Patriots team, simply because if you restrict the penalties, you're going to probably score more points. You're certainly going to have more total yardage. You're certainly going to get more people involved in that offense. And does it kind of start right now with the mistakes that you're self-inflicting, especially on the offensive side?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this offense isn't good enough right now. Eventually they will be. But this offense right now is not good enough to overcome 2nd and 15 or 1st and 20 after a holding penalty and stuff like that. I mean, you saw last year when they went through their growing pains, they couldn't resuscitate themselves from a long yardage passing situation in the early downs. I mean, they had a bit of a gift in their first touchdown drive when they got 44 yards to Edelman on 3rd and 15, but I mean, that was because of a boneheaded play by a quarterback who tried to get an interception and left the rest of his defense vulnerable. So, yeah, I mean, you put this team in long yard situations in first, second, or especially third down, obviously, because of sacks or because of penalties, it's going to be a whole lot more difficult for them to operate. And even if it doesn't even have to be on the first play of the drive, I mean, even if you get to midfield or you get to the 40, and then all of a sudden you got a holding penalty or one of the Soldiers' penalties or one of those guys gives up another sack, and then all of a sudden you're at 2nd and 18 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Again, this offense just right now isn't good enough to dig themselves out of that hole.
All right, so let's play off of that for just a second, Jeff. In your estimation, and it's kind of hard really in the big picture to do this, but what's the biggest nitpick you have for this team right now after 2 weeks?
I mean, it's hard to say because what they were so bad at against the Dolphins, they were really good at against the Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in terms of running the ball, that my biggest pet peeve with everybody, I mean, not really going out on a limb here, but after week one, the offensive line was atrocious.
Yep.
Number two, the defensive line was atrocious. And number three, they didn't run the ball. And again, they cured all of those ailments in week two. So we'll see if they can continue that stuff. The other one, I mean, now going forward, you want to see more balance in the offense. They're not getting anything out of their outside receivers. Brady was 5 of 16 when throwing to Tompkins and LaFell in week one, and he was 1 of 2 when throwing to Dobson in week two. And LaFell got no targets. Can't say I blame him for that after the 0 for 6 in week one.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, with the way that Brady was throwing the ball with high levels of success to those three guys during training camp, joint practices in the preseason, I think it's odd that it's all of a sudden completely come undone. And same with Amendola. Amendola was easily their second-best wide receiver in training camp, joint practices in the preseason, and he hasn't done anything so in the regular season. So there are those opportunities will continue, and I think Brady will see the opportunities that he's missed when he looks at the film, or when he already has looked at the film, obviously. So those are areas that will come together. Rob Gronkowski, you can't really nitpick there. I mean, it's an injury. The guy just doesn't look the same, but I think they know that they're not going to press the issue with him. And I thought the way that they used him Sunday was very telling in that, and that they really saved him in the, for the second half. I think he only played 8 snaps in the first half and was out there for like 19 of the first 27 in the second half, which is a complete 180 from week one. So, it's a team that has a formula with him. And once, you know, maybe 3 months from now, assuming he plays all 16 games, he's going to be a completely different player. But until that time comes, Brady knows he has to be better with guys who aren't named Julian Edelman.
Right, exactly. So it's kind of easy to see why he seems to be reliant in one or two particular instances, and perhaps some of these things work themselves out if they get a couple of their flaws corrected here. I'd be remiss, Jeff, if I didn't ask you about the news surrounding the NFL over the course of the last week or two with the domestic violence issues, the Adrian Peterson story, because before we left the air last week, this story about Peterson actually broke once we were done with our programming for the week. And there's no doubt in my mind that not having Peterson in the lineup certainly helped the Patriots' cause. It didn't win them the game necessarily, because I think it's a game they still could have won, but it certainly was a focal point. And now, in light of the fact that Minnesota governor today, Mark Dayton, issued a statement, because I guess there's another charge, potential charge out there against Peterson for injuring another child, and basically saying that he should be suspended again or kicked off the team or something. What are your thoughts here of how we, I guess, now are not really allowing due process to play out, especially in the world of sports? Is it, I'm trying to kind of get my hands around this, and I'm not sure which side I really fall on just yet. It's pretty easy for us to see evidence when places like TMZ Sports and release videotape and they release photos of abuse that's taking place. But at the same time, we do have a system in place that allows people an opportunity to tell their side of a story, no matter how egregious that error in judgment seems to be. Are we too quick to, I guess the ultimate question I have then is, are we too quick to find people guilty before due process takes its course? And should NFL players also, especially, be afforded the same due process as you or I?
Well, there's a few ways to go with that. Are we too quick to judge and all that stuff about due process? Yeah, no question about it. And I think Twitter is a big reason for that. I mean, Everybody right now has a voice they can carry as far as they essentially want their opinion to carry. In terms of the guilt, I mean, Ray Rice, what he did was deplorable. It was right there. It's right there in the public eye. I thought the Ravens finally handled it the way that they should have, although everybody knows. Mm-hmm. Everybody's opinion is pretty uniform on that one.
Yep.
With Adrian Peterson, you see the proof with the pictures, and Adrian Peterson has basically come out and admitted he hasn't denied a thing. So it's not like we're waiting on a level of guilt here. Adrian Peterson is basically just being like, yep, this is what I did. I didn't think it was wrong. So that's kind of hard to say. Are we jumping too quickly in terms of finding this man guilty in the public eye? Because Adrian Peterson isn't really trying to sway the opinion. It's basically right now, how do you want to discipline your kids? And Adrian Peterson thought what he did was fine, even though I think the vast majority of people disagree. And what the NFL can do, it's a private entity. And it's just like if you or I were put in the public eye and did something that Ray Rice or Adrian Peterson did, your employer, my employer, would have every right to suspend or terminate us just because they don't want the greater good, their company, to look bad or to make it look like they stand for or they permit this type of behavior and find it acceptable. So when you work in the public eye, especially with the way Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice do, and you work for a business that makes as much money and is as widespread as it is, and everybody in the world or everybody in America certainly knows who they are, Adrian Peterson to a much greater extent. I mean, you're talking about a guy who is as close to a Hall of Fame lock as there is in the league right now, or last week's actions. The league has to step in, and the league has to make sure that if they feel that they want to take that course of action to protect the league and the image then they have every right in the world to do so.
I think that's well said. I really, you know, the whole private entity, public entity situation that comes up, that's really hard to juggle. And I understand both sides of the story. I certainly see both sides of the story. There are some guys, I think, that will probably get caught here that, you know, because of the court of public opinion, always thinking guilt before innocence, that probably are going to deserve a better shake than the one that they receive. That may not be the case necessarily in the cases of Ray Rice or Adrian Peterson or Ray McDonald or Greg Hardy, for that matter. But fact of the matter is that I think the NFL has done a great job in the past of protecting its image. That's why everybody, you know, considers the shield to be shiny. And now the shield is less shiny because of some of these instances and because the NFL is as popular as it is. There's more scrutiny placed on this. Suffice to say, at the very least, it's probably good that these subjects, no matter how painful they may be, and no matter how much they really don't have to do with football, and that's what we're here to try to discuss, it is still good that we're talking about them, don't you think?
In terms of raising awareness,
yes,
trying to create a positive message and all that stuff, yeah, absolutely. And I think there's it's not always good. I mean, there are people who probably use this as a way to gain their, to throw an opinion out there to raise their own personal reputation, and you know, but you see some ugly with that with every subject that comes up. But in terms of raising positive awareness and putting a good discussion on it and hopefully changing some lives for the better in terms of people who live a more private life, maybe you got some parents. I saw a father and his young son wearing Adrian Peterson jerseys at the Vikings game on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot that needs to be done, but who knows? I mean, at least if the discussion in this whole thing helps shape somebody's life for the better, then yeah, it's a positive thing.
You know, I saw a couple of those in the stands as well. I have to admit, you know, my first reaction is, well, that's terrible. But I understand also, depending on the age of the child and depending on the parent's individual skills, parenting skills, as to, you know, hey, maybe it's a ritual that the son and the father have and wearing the same jerseys and matching going to games. And maybe the child just isn't in a position yet to understand what really happened. And so maybe there's a point in time where you might sit down and have this conversation with your child, but maybe now would not be the time. I can see a lot of different variables going here. And so that's why, my first reaction was, oh, that's terrible. And then I thought about it, and I'm like, well, you know what? I don't know that individual case, so I'm going to try to hold judgment.
I mean, I said this to somebody when we were just, there were so many Adrian Peterson jerseys in the stands that day.
Yeah.
From couples to fathers and sons to whatever.
Yeah.
They live in Minnesota. They own a sweatshirt. You know, it's probably a Vikings sweatshirt because they love the Vikings up there. They didn't need to. Nobody forced them to wear an Adrian Peterson jersey. That's the one weekend when maybe you think to yourself, you know what? Maybe I leave this one in the closet.
Yeah, what does this represent? Yeah. Yeah. I can see it. Jeff, thanks again for taking the time today. It's greatly appreciated. Good stuff. We'll continue reading.
All right, thanks a lot for having me. Have a good one.
You got, you too. Jeff Howe, Boston Herald, covers New England Patriots. You can follow him on Twitter, if you don't already, at Jeff P. Howe, H-O-W-E, is his last name. Again, just to give you a beat reporter's perspective on where the Patriots are after 2 weeks, they're 1-1. It was a resounding win. It was even a dominant win at times on Sunday. And then, of course, the stories within the story this week having to do with the whole Ray Rice issue that we spent the better part of the last 2 weeks talking about here since this football season kicked off, and now the Adrian Peterson story, which broke once we were done with our program last Thursday here on the Playbook, and has exacerbated itself to the point now where, as I mentioned with Jeff a couple of moments ago, if you have not heard or read the story online today, Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton issued this statement. One day, of course, yesterday, the Vikings announcing that Peterson was expected to play this weekend against New Orleans. The quote from the governor was, "It's an awful situation. Yes, Mr. Peterson is entitled to due process and should be, quote, innocent until proven guilty, end quote. However, he's a public figure, and his actions, as described, are a public embarrassment to the Vikings organization in the state of Minnesota. Whipping a child to the extent of visible wounds, as has been alleged, should not be tolerated in our state. Therefore, I believe the team should suspend Mr. Peterson until the accusations of child abuse have been resolved by the criminal justice system. However, I will not turn my back on the Vikings and their fans, as some have suggested. The Vikings belong to Minnesota, and in Minnesota. This has been the team's only home, and our citizens, including myself, have been its most dedicated fans. That was the statement from Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton earlier today, as the Vikings are preparing for Peterson to take the field this week after sitting out against the Patriots this past weekend. That's why the other part of our question today here on Nitpick Tuesday, in addition to the nits you're picking on the Patriots' performance, has to do with whether or not you're in line with this, allowing guilt to permeate itself here before innocence is proven, especially within the NFL. Is that the right thing to do? Are NFL teams hiding behind the legal system so they're star players can play a game? Does a team need to step up and say, all right, that's it, you're done? Under no circumstances, whether or not this person is innocent or guilty in a court of law? Now, again, in the court of public opinion, we all know the level of guilt sustained here by Ray Rice and by Adrian Peterson, because we've seen the evidence ourselves. If we're sitting on a grand jury, we're sure as heck indicting, aren't we? That's exactly what a Texas grand jury did. They made the same decision you or I did. They took a look at those pictures of his son Tyrese and said, that's awful. Is that the right thing to do? I'm asking you. I mean, we've created this dialogue now. Maybe we need to continue it a little bit further. I'd be curious to know what you think about it. Let me also add one more piece of the puzzle here to the equation, because there's also some news today that the NFL is discussing potentially jumping in and intervening in the Greg Hardy case. I'm not certain what they feel like they can do in this particular instance, but they might step in and say, we're gonna kind of take this out of your hands. Now, that's a bit unusual. Maybe the NFL feels like it needs to be proactive because they have been very, very reactive in the case of Ray Rice. They allow the Vikings to step up and be proactive in the case of Peterson. Ian Rappaport, formerly of the Boston Herald, and he's a media insider with NFL.com, he reported earlier today that the league is discussing whether or not they should intervene here. Hardy was arrested on charges of assault on a female and communicating threats back in May. Hardy's attorney has maintained that the woman was attacking Hardy and a friend and wouldn't leave the premises, and that it was Hardy who called 911 when the woman wouldn't leave. Well, after the Panthers deactivated Hardy for Sunday's game against Detroit, and this happened late on Saturday night, Coach Ron Rivera told reporters yesterday he would decide later this week whether Hardy will play Sunday night against Pittsburgh. And now the league is apparently having discussions as to whether or not the Panthers should do just that. Should they step in? Does this give the NFL any less of a black eye where this, you know, horrific issue of domestic abuse and domestic violence is coming into fore? I don't know. I'd be interested into your thoughts today on all of this. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address you hit us up on. Pick up the phones. Let's go. 855-PATS-500. 855-PATS-500 is the toll-free line. Hit me up on Twitter, @JRBroadcaster, and find me on Facebook, John.Rook, R-O-O-K-E. All right, let's get a break in here, and I'm going to let you have your say. Nitpicks, will go over your say on the subject of the day concerning guilt until proven innocent in the NFL. Coming up in the playbook.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company. One that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. one that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
I say 1-800-MY-SEATS. Call me.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, And before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit patriots.com/the list to join today.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
Didn't like what you saw from the hometown team last Sunday?
4th and 10 for the Patriots. A last gasp. Brady from the gun. Get a four-man rush for the Dolphins. Tom, again, as he releases, ball comes loose, and another sack by Wake. The Dolphins can start celebrating.
Well, John didn't either.
Sucky, sucky, sucky.
It's Nitpick Tuesday on Patriots Playbook. Phone in your nitpicks on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 855-PATS-500 or email them to webradio@patriots.com. Now back to the nitwit, Nitpick Master himself, John Rook.
Okay, so I'm the nitwit. We didn't play Miami last week. We played Minnesota.
No, I had to find... It was the only call we've had of them losing so far. So if they lose again, I got to leave a crummy call in there.
Well, all right.
Unless the only thing I could have maybe put in from the Minnesota game is, like, did they turn the ball over? No?
Patriots had no turnovers.
Yeah, so there was not much to find in way of game calls to throw in there for this week.
Well, you could have taken the Minnesota touchdown call in the opening drive of the game, because I don't know about you, but I thought that was a hell of a kick in the teeth to get the game started on Sunday. I mean, you want to talk about nitpicks? That was the first one to get after right there. How do you allow this team the chance to move the ball down the field 80-some-odd yards, or as it was, 70-some-odd yards, and score on the opening possession of the game? Talk about setting the tempo. Talk about setting an example. Oh, my goodness. Could it have really started any worse than to have Minnesota march the ball right down your throats and let Matt Asiata do most of the running down your throat, and you score a touchdown? Now, I will say this. Clearly, Clearly, the Patriots made adjustments. Clearly, they had a better game plan. Clearly, they discovered how to manage and maintain a point of emphasis on the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball. Definite improvement in the right direction, without a doubt. But you really could not start any worse than you did. Did they make adjustments? Yes. Could you understand maybe that that was a little bit of a, I don't know, a feeling out process? Okay, I'll even take that. But boy, you can't get much worse than that. And then my number one nitpick overall, and I'm sure many of you will have to agree with this, has to be, 15 penalties for 163 yards. Combined with 9 penalties for 100 yards at Miami, that's now 24 penalties for 263 yards. I opined about this on View from Above. And penalties come down to one of a couple of things. It can come down to a lack of attention to detail. It can come down to lack of preparation, or it can just come down to pure stupidity. I don't know where, and I won't judge where. I will just tell you that once one or two seem to happen, sometimes they seem to snowball on you, and it's up to every player who gets the playing time on this team to take it upon himself to say, I am going to do my job. That's why the mantra for this team has been, do your job. Because they've been so successful in doing just that. That has been the quote-unquote Patriot way for so many years here. Not enough people did that. Against a better team than Minnesota, that is a sure sign for defeat. Even if you manage to turn the other team over four times like the Patriots did. Now, I will argue here that they needed every one of those interceptions, and they certainly needed that block punt because you didn't feel, relatively comfortable until Chandler Jones came up with his big play in the third quarter. Nobody did. I didn't feel comfortable. I know you didn't either. I really, the penalties, though, will solve a lot of ills. I know there's been some hand-wringing over the offense not being up to snuff, looking back over the last couple of days at the game on Sunday. And Brady's penchant for targeting Edelman and not, favoriting other receivers. Okay, there's some merit in that, but I would also tell you that if you don't commit these penalties, those other receivers are getting touches, and this offense is moving the ball. And this offense has more yardage. That was a performance of well over 400 yards of total offense if you eliminate the mistakes. And a couple of the field goals that Steven Gostkowski kicked probably turned into 7. By all rights and reasons, my estimation is that game on Sunday was 42-7. Should have been 42-7. Now, what's the difference between 30-7 and 42-7? Not much, except for 12 points. Smart Alec. Gotcha on that one. 12 points. Okay. No difference. No, none. It's still a big win. I get that. But against a better team, maybe it turns a 24-14 game into, 24-14 the other way. You catch the gist of this? Against Denver, against even Indianapolis, last night notwithstanding, I can't believe Philadelphia came back to win that game. That was a little stunning to me. I turned it off at 20-6. Turned it back on in the post game, and I'm like, what the heck? So it happens. Just shows you should never turn it off. I mean, against the better teams on your schedule, you cannot shoot yourself in the foot. And I'm going to tell you that penalties are self-inflicted wounds. Sometimes the opposition can cause a turnover if you don't drop it. You usually have to credit the opposition for creating a turnover, but the opposition doesn't create penalties. You commit the penalty. The opposition has nothing to do with it. That's on you. That's on you. You can control that. The opposition can't control that. Because you know what the rules are, at least you're supposed to know. You know what you're allowed to do and what you cannot get away with. Sometimes you may get away with it. But it's only fool's gold. It's not going to last long. The next time you try it, you may not get away with it, and you may cost your team dearly, like as in points, taking them off the scoreboard, or wiping out a first down, or worse yet, and this has been, correct me if I'm wrong here, Pats fans, but the worst, the most egregious error that we've seen is the Patriots' defense inability to force three and outs, to get off the field on third downs, whether it's a three and out or not. And most of the time, it's been because of a mistake made by the defense in terms of a penalty that has allowed a team to continue a drive. Oh, those get me more than anything else. And so I pile all of these mistakes together, and this is my huge, egregious nitpick for the week. 15 penalties for 163 yards is not championship football. 15 penalties for 163 yards is selfish, stupid football. The one thing I will say is that every guy in the locker room down the hallway here at Gillette knows exactly what I'm saying right now, and there's not a single one that will disagree because they know they can control the mistakes. The coaches know they can control the mistakes. But now it's up to the coaching staff to enforce. To enforce. To make sure that these guys know that if you screw up, you're not going to be in there any longer. You're out. I just get a certain lackadaisical feel when it comes to the mistakes. Bill Belichick talked about it after the game on Sunday. He said, yeah, we've got to do a better job teaching this, coaching this. I 110% agree on that. But the question is, all right, what repercussions are it going to be? You know, if guys continue to make mistakes, are you going to hold them out? Now, you've done that with Stephen Ridley in the past. When he's fumbled the ball, he fumbles the ball, he's gone, right? He's out. He's on the sidelines. Well, you're going to have to do that with other guys. And does that speak to a sense of continuity, especially if some of these mistakes come in the offensive line, which they did this last week? I mean, how about the play? How about the stretch in the third quarter when Nate Solder had three penalties called on him in two plays, two snaps of the football? That was one of my biggest nitpicks from this past Sunday. And Nate did man up afterward, after the game, and he said, yeah, I got to do a better job there. Well, you certainly do. But you can't let yourself get into that position. You've got to think on every snap of the football. You've got to be focused on what your task is, on what your assignment is, on the particular task. You don't need to pay attention to the scoreboard. You don't need to pay attention really to, you know, down and distance unless you're a back or a receiver or the quarterback. You need to worry about attacking the man in front of you. Or keeping the man in front of you from doing the attacking. That's your job as an offensive lineman. So, yeah, we're nitpicking here. Do I like Nate Solder? I absolutely do. You know, he kind of reminds me of the old, you know, Al McGuire basketball adage. You know, it's hard to teach, hard to coach. You know, coach up aircraft carriers. He's an aircraft carrier for an offensive lineman. He's just huge. He blots out the sun. You know, Marcus Cannon is a bit of a concern as well, even though he's mostly been a tackle. They've slotted him in right now at Logan Mankin's old spot at left guard. I don't really have a problem with that. I do also like the fact that this last week, the Patriots kept the offensive line pretty much intact for the whole game. There was not the rotating around that we saw week one against Miami. That, to me, was a definite step in the right direction. It's like, okay, these are our guys. This is what we're going with. And say what you want about the individual players, but at least they recognize there has to be a sense of continuity within the offensive line to give Brady confidence that he has time to find his receivers. Now, that wasn't as much in play this week because of the emphasis on trying to run the football and be physical. But we did see continuity begin to develop. All right, let me share a couple of them here. Mark from Saskatchewan, Canada, via email, says, John, I know it's Nitpick Tuesday, so if I have to come up with one, it's why isn't Gronk not on the field more on third down in red zone, as if they're going to limit his snaps? Wouldn't you think that's when they would limit them to? It's actually, a decent point, Mark. I would tell you that I think they're trying not to do that specifically because they don't want to target it, and they don't want other teams to be able to plan on when he's going to be in or out of a game. He's clearly not 100% yet. So I think they're going to continue to pick and choose his spots until hopefully, say, 3 to 6 weeks from now, and it's probably somewhere in that vicinity, and it may be more toward the middle part of the season before we see Gronk really play like we feel Gronk can play. And then your question may not be as much of a problem. But I think they don't want teams to game plan for them in that regard. He also says, I wanted to say, I took the trip to Minnesota for my first ever NFL game, and just let me say it was an unbelievable experience. And from the crazy tailgating to the Pats winning and to seeing Brady come out for warmups and seeing him in person live was a surreal experience. And you Americans are truly lucky to experience live games in person. And so as much as the Pats have to work on, I have no complaints from Sunday. One of the greatest experiences in my life. Go Pats. Thank you, Mark, and I'm glad you had a great time at the game. That's what it's all about, brother, and I'm glad you had a good time. Timothy says, I don't get why Danny A. Amendola is still around. They're paying him way too much to get hurt and not play a huge part. I know they expected him to be great, but how much more are we going to waste? Why not invest in a quality wide receiver to help Edelman and then rotate between Dobson, LaFell, or Tompkins? Plus, if you have a good wide receiver, you wouldn't need to rotate between the five or six that we do now. Well, again, Timothy, I think you're probably showing some of the same frustrations that a lot of fans are showing now, because Amendola hasn't really been targeted by Brady. But we're only 2 weeks into the regular season, and I said this off at the top of the show an hour ago. Number one, you kind of have to throw last week out with the bathwater because it was just a complete abomination all the way around. This week, the game plan was clearly to be physical and run the ball, which isn't going to include necessarily a guy like Amendola. And you are going to lean on your binky in this particular instance, Julian Edelman, a heck of a lot more, because you need to know you can get the yards. Now, Amendola did have a great play that was rubbed out by a penalty. It was a 26-yard catch and run that could have even been broken for more for a touchdown. But Aaron Dobson had an illegal pick called, and it rubbed out the catch. Would you feel any different about Amendola if he was able to get credit for that catch? You might, because it was a big play, and it was the only real time that he was targeted. So, again, consider the game plan before you are ready to, throw away Danny Amendola. Let's revisit this, let's say, in about 4 to 6 weeks again. And if he's still not contributing, or he doesn't have one or two decent games in there where he's called upon to be a factor, then your lament may have some real validity to it. But let's hold off just a little bit on that. Mike from Rancho Cucamonga, California. Who's been playing mostly the starting strong safety role? Well, they've been actually kind of alternating that. They've actually had Pat Chung in there a lot against the run, and they've had Daron Harmon in there a lot against the pass. They like still both of those guys, but seeing that the weakness apparently for Chung, as we've known for several years now, is against the pass, and the weakness for Harmon may be against the run, although they're trying to develop him. I think they want him to take over that role as the quintessential starting, quote-unquote, strong safety. I don't think he's there yet, so I think that's why you see the Patriots kind of mix and match depending upon what they feel the opposition is going to do. He also says, I think when Brian Timms comes back, I think Boyce will be cut and he'll get added to the practice squad. That might also happen. Garland says, do you think the Pats will try and trade we'll trade and try and get a good quality running back. Why not trade Amendola since he hadn't been a factor in the offense? Brandon Bolden is horrible, needs to be cut. Also, what are your thoughts on Easley so far? All right, let me take one at a time here. Try and get a good quality running back. I would tell you I think they have two, maybe two and a half. I can't disagree with you with Bolden. He didn't look like the same guy that we saw in the preseason, and maybe some of that is because of the quality of opposition that he's running up against. Trading Amendola, he's got another year on his contract after this, so unless you find a money match, that isn't going to happen either. And again, see my previous answer on Amendola before my willingness to shed, you know, his contract and his presence on this team. The other question is, what do you think of Easley so far? I actually thought Easley was pretty effective, especially on passing downs this last week. He seemed to be able to get penetration, which is really good. And so, you know, for a guy that's coming off of two major knee surgeries, he looked a little more like you would expect a first-round potential draft pick to look like. He's not there yet. And yes, as you suggested, they are easing him into the defense. Garland says, from what I saw, the limited snaps he had on Sunday, he was able to put some pressure on the offensive line. Not sure if he looks explosive like he was in college. Well, first of all, no rookie is going to look explosive like you do in college because the talent level blocking in front of you is just going to be better. But the explosiveness is going to take some time to come back. Here's one from Lou in Ohio. Says, did you see the Old Spice commercial with the beautiful ladies and the mechanical man in the hot tub during the game? That's creepy. I didn't see that. I'll have to look out for that one. I'll have to look out for that. All right. Let's get a couple of phone calls. Trey in Memphis. Thanks for hanging on, Trey. You're in the playbook.
Hey, how's it going, John?
Good, Trey. How's it going with you?
Man, I've been trying to find more than one bright spot about us this past Sunday's win, but it was good to see the kicking game. It seemed to be intact. It was good to see Gostkowski hit a 340 plus yarders.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty good. And so with that note, he struggled just a little bit on last year. But I want to go to the offense first, man. I think that, you know, Brady is really force-feeding the ball to Julian a little bit too much, man. And
Why do you say that, Trey?
Because he acts like no one else is on the field, man. And I saw two or three plays where Amendola was open. I saw some plays where Dobson was open. I mean, but Brady still feels the need to just go to Elderman. And we dodged the bullet. You remember when Elderman head hit the turf?
Yeah.
I mean, now we dodged the bullet. And you know that Julian has he has had a concussion before. And I feel that, man, for us to be a great offense, I mean, Brady's going to have to share the ball, man. I mean, Dobson showed last year that he can catch the deep ball. I mean, because he barbecued Ike Taylor on last year in the Steeler game.
All right.
And we wasting deep balls on Elderman. And I just feel that I know that Eric Dobson can get it done. I mean, man, I saw this kid do it in college. I mean, so how do you expect the receivers to get in the rhythm, you know, to get their hand and eye coordination down and get a rapport with you, and you're not even throwing him the ball?
Okay, well, I understand your complaint. That seems to be one of the chief nitpicks, if you will, coming off of the game on Sunday, is that Brady is targeting certain receivers too much and not targeting others enough. And to that, again, part of my explanation earlier was, Trey, that, and I'm sure you heard this, that, you know, the game plan was to run the football. The game plan was to be physical. The game plan was to dominate on the line of scrimmage, which means you're not going to have as many opportunities to pass the ball. So regardless of who you're targeting, you know, your point is to run the ball.
Yeah, I mean, but John, this goes back to last year. Even years before. This is an ongoing thing. I mean, regardless of what the game plan is, I mean, I know sometimes the game plan is to throw the ball. I mean, you know, when you start.
Well, if your game plan is to throw the ball and you're being, you know, single-minded in your targeting, then I can certainly understand why you would have that complaint. Let's find out. Let's get a different point of view on this. So hang on for a second, Trey. Let's see if we can get your question answered. Eric Friends covers the AFC East for Boston.com, and he joins us here in the playbook. Hey, Eric, how's it going today?
It's going well, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking some time today, pal. Appreciate it. The question I will kind of throw out to you, the Trey in Memphis has this, and I'm sure you've probably heard this criticism as well over the course of the last couple of days since the game on Sunday, is that Brady's targeting Julian Edelman or even another receiver too often and not looking away at secondary receivers. What are your thoughts on whether or not that really is a problem with Tom?
Well, it kind of is. I mean, I would have to say, you know, offensively, it seems like everything kind of runs through Edelman, and I think, you know, it would be better for them to spread the ball around a bit. I think that's, you know, why they went out and picked up Brandon LaFell this offseason and Danny Amendola last year and Aaron Dobson, Kemba Tompkins, all the names on that list. You name it. I mean, a lot of those guys aren't getting looks where Julian Edelman's getting pretty much all of them, and whether that's a function of, you know, him being in the right spot and him doing exactly what Brady expects him to do on every play, or whether that's Brady simply, you know, realizing that, look, you know, my best bet in terms of completing a pass is Edelman short route over the middle, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, going outside the numbers and deep to guys like Aaron Dobson or Brandon LaFell. I think, you know, that's kind of up for debate, but there's definitely a kind of a symptom here. What exactly the prognosis is, that's another question entirely.
Yeah, and, you know, I could also, you know, answer that by saying, well, you know, and you kind of alluded to it here, Eric, that maybe Edelman's the only guy that's doing what he's supposed to be doing, according to Brady, and so Edelman's the only one he's got any confidence in getting the ball to.
Yeah, I mean, that could be the problem. I mean, I look at one particular aspect of Brady's game that's kind of come under fire a lot, especially recently, is his, you know, inaccuracy on deep throws, and I mean, I think we saw that this week. He missed Edelman, who seemed to be wide open on one throw, and I think he's 1 for 12 now throwing deeper than 20 yards downfield. So, I mean, obviously that's not really a strong point in his game. The Patriots don't really have a lot of receivers that can get deep. They have Aaron Dobson and Brandon LaFell, but haven't really gotten them worked into the mix too much in that respect. So they have some work to do, I think, in terms of figuring out ways to get the ball spread around and get create some more explosive plays on offense.
I think that's part of the reason why Brady was unhappy as he was after the game, even though you win by 23?
Well, I mean, look, anytime you leave points on the field, he'll probably be unhappy. But, I mean, I think he would probably be unhappy if they had won that game by another 2 touchdowns, just because he's always really critical of himself. But definitely something that, you know, they kind of need to work on in terms of, you know, getting other guys incorporated.
All right. So, this being said, a win is a win in this instance. They did revert to trying to win the line of scrimmage, which is something they were sorely mismatched at against Miami the week before. So maybe mission more accomplished in that realm. So what then is the next step in your estimation for this offense to try to take?
Well, I think, you know, they took a big step this week by getting the running game more involved. I think that was a really big, something that was missing for them last week against the Dolphins. They were really unbalanced. You know, I think Brady dropped back to throw like 60 times. They only ran the ball 20 times against the Dolphins in this week. 37 rushing attempts, 23 dropbacks for Brady. So, definitely a more balanced attack. And that's a little bit easier to get that accomplished when you're winning by, you know, 20 points in the second half. But, certainly, I think, you know, if this offense is going to take another step forward, I mean, first of all, they got to get Rob Gronkowski a little bit more involved. And I know that might sound kind of odd considering, you know, it seems like if there's one other receiver that Brady's been kind of locking into besides Edelman, it would be Gronkowski. But, I mean, he only had 4 catches in each of the past 2 games. They need to find a way to get him the ball a little bit more often. I think that's one thing they need to do. And then otherwise, from that, like I said, I think that the explosive passes there, they need to find a way to create more big plays. And there was one in particular that I really liked where mm-hmm. Brady had a play action fake to Vereen and went backside to Julian Edelman on a fade route and beat Xavier Rhodes for a 44-yard gain. I thought that was a really good way to get an explosive play to kind of, you know, the misdirection and go to the other side of the field. Brady's been pretty good at that in his career, so I think that's something that they could work into the game as well.
I would also suggest to you they had one of those explosive plays against Danny Amendola. They got called back because of a penalty because Aaron Dobson ran an illegal pick.
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, that happened last week, too, with Brandon LaFell. They had an illegal pick, and that was something that I think, you know, they kind of have to get the timing down on those a little bit better. I don't think it's necessarily an issue of the execution of it. I think it's just the timing and how it works in terms of when the ball is released and when it's caught. So I think if they can do a bit better of a job of those pick plays, and they've been really good at running those in the past without getting penalized for it. So if they can get a little bit more practice on those, I think they should be all right.
All right. Eric Friends, again, who covers the AFC East for Boston.com, with us here in the playbook today. This team, has had the benefit of, I guess, for lack of, it's not a stretch to say that they were helped by Adrian Peterson's absence on Sunday. I don't think he was the difference between winning and losing, but it certainly made Minnesota a little bit more one-dimensional. That's where the Patriots like to go on defense anyway, is try to make a team as one-dimensional as they possibly can. Looking a little bit toward this next week and finally getting a chance to play at home, which seems weird, getting your, first home game in the third week of the season, you're going to have a team that's trying to find itself identity as well in Oakland. They're struggling at 0-2. I think there's going to be a tendency to have a national, at least a little bit of a letdown here. I don't care, whether it's early in the season or not. And a lot of the guys, I'm sure a lot of the folks this week will be, oh, no, there's no letdown. It's another game. Anybody in the NFL can win. I'm not buying that argument. Where does the focus then need to lie based on what we saw this last week?
Well, I think, obviously without Adrian Peterson, the Vikings offense was a bit more one-dimensional, but I think technique-wise, it looked a lot better, and scheme-wise as well. I mean, we saw the Patriots in the first game. They went to a 3-4 defense for the most part, three-man line with Chandler Jones on the end. And that was a big point of criticism for that first week was, why is Jones two-gapping on the end instead of rushing upfield? And then they found a way to get him a little bit more involved in the pass rushing element by putting him on the end of the line in a 4-3, by standing him up at the outside linebacker spot in a 3-4, and by running a little bit more versatile schemes to kind of get him involved in that sense. So I think defensively they made the right adjustments regardless of whether Adrian Peterson was in the lineup or not. I wouldn't say that they would have a letdown necessarily against the Raiders. I mean, I feel like they have at least one of those letdown kind of games this season early on in the season, and we already had one of those against the Dolphins. So, I mean, I think, it's one of those things where the Patriots tend to kind of find their sea legs early on in the season, get a lot better as the season wears on. And I think really that's kind of what we're going to expect from this defense is that, can they continue to build on the improvements that they made this past week?
Right. All right. Before we completely put this thing to bed then, what other nitpicks, if you will, stood out on Sunday? In other words, areas of improvement that need to come for this team to continue making those positive gains forward?
Well, I think, one thing specifically would be, again, I think if they can get a little bit more, incorporated on the offensive side in terms of, getting those weapons more involved, I think that would be my biggest nitpick. Again, I think the offense, they did enough to hold it together, but my question is, can they keep it going and can they pick it up when the defense kind of lets them down a bit? So,
yeah.
I mean, early, even against the Dolphins last week, they had the three turnovers in the first quarter, in the first half, rather, and then really after that, once the defense stopped getting those turnovers, the offense went right in the tank and they didn't score any points in the second half. So I think the offense, they kind of need to get it clicking, and I think getting more weapons involved into that passing game will be a great first step. I think one thing specifically that I would like to see more is screen passes, and they had a bunch of them in week one against the Dolphins. They didn't do nearly as much of it in week two, but I thought that what they did against the Vikings, one thing that I liked from the offensive game plan was the use of the draw runs and also the use of a delayed handoff and play action fakes, kind of a way to alleviate some of the pressure on that offensive line. I mean, obviously that group did not have a good showing in the first game. They played much better this past week, but I think part of that was due to the game plan. So I'd like to see the offensive line, I mean, as much as the running game did do its part against the Vikings, I'd like to see them really fire off the ball, open up those holes in the running game, right up the middle. Specifically, I'm talking guys like Marcus Cannon and Dan Connolly, who I thought really didn't have much of a good game against either the Vikings or the Dolphins. So I'd like to see those guys step it up a little bit more this week.
Yeah, and to sort of back up what you're saying there, your colleague on Boston.com, Zuri Berry wrote today. So far, none of the lofty expectations for Tom Brady and company have transpired. The Patriots are 27th overall ranked in offense. That's certainly not a Patriots-like number.
No, definitely not. And certainly, you know, like I was saying, you know, when you have only one real option in the passing game and everything kind of runs through him, and you're also relying on him to not only catch passes in the passing game, but also to return long punts in the special teams game, I think you're looking at a situation where if Edelman goes down with an injury, I mean, they don't really have much else going for them offensively. So, again, I think, I know I've harped on this a lot in the time I've been on with you, but I think if they can find a way to get guys like Brandon LaFell more involved. And one thing that I noticed about LaFell is that he played, I think, 38 snaps in total against the Vikings, and he was a blocker on 25 of them.
Yeah.
So he was only really a passing threat on 13 plays in that entire game. And I think, you know, when you go out and you get a guy in free agency, you're expecting him to come in and maybe not necessarily contribute huge numbers right away, but you want him to be a part of your plan pretty quickly. And I mean, so far that hasn't been the case for him.
That's a great point. All right, before we let you go, one big positive, because I know that a lot of fans, maybe even some of the media, have been clamoring for more from Chandler Jones, and the Patriots got that this week and then some, didn't they?
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, a lot of people have been ranting and raving about Chandler Jones, and I'm right on that boat as well. But I mean, as far as Jones goes, I think he's been playing really well, but my big all-star on the defensive side has been Dante Hightower. I think he's been just as productive as Chandler Jones, but he's been doing it from multiple spots, and especially this past week, you know, he was not only, you know, down on the line rushing the passer and as an outside linebacker doing the same, but he was also, you know, dropping back into coverage a bit. He had a couple of nice open field tackles on Cordarrelle Patterson to kind of stop him from picking up those yards after the catch that he's kind of made himself notorious for in his first couple of seasons in the NFL. So I think Hightower really has been a huge bright spot for the defense. And in terms of that flexibility that they love to have in terms of going back and forth from the 3-4 to the 4-3, both Chandler Jones and Dante Hightower figure to factor into that pretty heavily.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, it does seem like Hightower's a little bit more comfortable, especially with the 4 and even sometimes 5-man fronts that we saw this team utilize this last week against Minnesota. Looks like he's dealing from a little bit more of a comfort zone, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I know that I mentioned that he had a couple of nice open field tackles on Cordarrelle Patterson, but
yep.
I mean, I think that one reason that he's had such a huge resurgence has been the fact that the Patriots haven't really been putting him in space very much. They've been having him, you know, kind of isolated in one-on-one situations at the line of scrimmage instead,
yep.
Which is where he was, you know, that's how he became a first-round draft pick at Alabama in the first place. And then they kind of had him playing out of his comfort zone over the past two seasons, playing a little bit more in space, you know, as a result of them running the 4-3 defense. And now when you have him in the 3-4 and in a 4-3 over, which is what they were running against the Vikings, you can have him on the line a little bit more instead of having him out in the open field.
And that plays much more to his strength, as you just suggested, the kind of linebacker that everybody thought that the Patriots were getting when they drafted him from Alabama. Now, you could say that maybe some of the other issues in space, as you term it, might just be part of the learning, you know, curve that he needs to make in order to be able to at least be adequate in that realm, but that they want to get back to a strong suit as well so he can play on the field maybe more than half of the snaps in a football game.
Well, yeah, I mean, certainly last season I think was kind of an exception for him because he was kind of everybody more or less, but him specifically, he was thrust into a situation where, you know, he was playing on the weak side a bit more as opposed to the strong side where he's excelled in his career. But he was playing more on the weak side to kind of alleviate some of the loss of Jerod Mayo. And then obviously when Jamie Collins started to pick it up last year towards the end of the season, they started to put him more back on the strong side with Collins on the weak side. So I think that's something that they could work into the game plan a little bit more in the coming weeks. And certainly, I mean, Hightower, like I said, I mean, he made his hay in college as a guy on the edge.
Yep.
And I think, you know, putting him back there really plays to his strength.
All right. Good stuff, Eric. Thanks so much for doing that today. And we look forward to visiting with you again very soon.
Thanks a lot, John. Good talking to you.
You too. Thanks. Eric Frenz covers the AFC East for Boston.com. You can also follow him on Twitter at Eric Frenz, E-R-I-K-F-R-E-N-Z is how you spell his name. All right. So Trey in Memphis, you still with us?
Yeah.
All right. So did any of that answer your question?
Yes, it did, but I'm, you know, I understand what he's saying, but I'm not going to make any more excuses, man, for our quarterback, man. I mean, because, you know, he gets passes for everything that he, that for his accomplishments of something that he haven't done of since 2004, which is a decade ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I still, you know, I understand. I mean, as far as, you know, being where you need to be and, you know, and where, but I still think everybody's where they need to be. I just think of the routes that the Elderman runs just give Brady the opportunity to get the ball out of his hands,
mm-hmm,
really, really quick. So, I mean, but I guess if we're going to keep on just going with that, man, I mean, we're going to end up losing Julian, man. I mean, because I was at the game on last year when the Patriots and the Cleveland Browns played. Man, Gronk was tired as hell. Two plays before, Gronk had to run like a deep seam route. And he just barely made it back to the huddle.
Okay.
And then we turn right back around, throw Gronk the ball again, and he gets hurt.
Okay.
I mean, so if we're just going to keep on putting a lot of wear and tear on Julian, man, we're going to lose him.
That's, you know, again, overall, that's a fair assessment. They are going to have to learn how to.
And I'm scared that I'm really afraid that that's what's going to happen, man.
Well, but then again, you also can't play afraid either, and that's why he's in there to be able to take those kind of tough throws, and that's, you know, what Wes Welker did so well for a number of years. And I remember people initially, you know, saying, "Oh, well, Edelman is just Welker light." Well, it turns like, you know, he's every bit as good maybe as Welker was when Welker was here in his prime. He's certainly fulfilling the same role.
Yeah, he's as good as Welker. I mean, he's more explosive and he's more valuable.
Well, he's a little bit more value. I think there is a more explosiveness. That's a good point by you. Certainly in the punting game, in the return game, he's every bit as explosive, if not more so, than Welker, because we've seen that. I mean, he leads the NFL in punt returns after a couple of weeks, too. So, I mean, that's where his real, I think, help to this team in terms of giving them better field position is coming into play.
Yeah, and one last thing, I know you got to go. As far as the defense concerns, I really thought that they played with more enthusiasm or with more energy, and it seemed like, you know, everybody knew what they was doing. Well, now the first drive, now, you know, that's a totally different story. Cause,
well, that's why
they sort of went up the field like they was the Denver Broncos.
Yeah,
but
well,
I think of what it was. Minnesota was playing on such a high, man.
Yeah,
like, you know, everybody was bouncing around.
I think that's a good point. I think there's a lot of emotion for Minnesota. I think they wanted to come out strong because of what had transpired in the whole Adrian Peterson story. And I think that certainly there was some issue with the Patriots as well. But give the Patriots at least a little credit for making the adjustments that they didn't make week one against, you know, Miami, and that they were able to make those against Minnesota and shut the Vikings down. I mean, it's amazing to think that over a third of the entire total offense gained by Minnesota on Sunday was gained in that opening drive. Like something like 37%. Patriots defense limited the Vikings to just 217 total yards of offense on Sunday. Now that's a remarkable performance in this day and age of offense in the NFL. Kind of hard to overlook that. Michael says on Facebook, or excuse me here, this is email. Michael from Kansas City. I'm eager to see the Pats beat the Chiefs for Monday Night Football. Love the show. I'm very pleased to hear you back on the radio. And for the love of God, keep the podcast up on iTunes, as this is the only way I'm able to listen to the show due to my busy schedule with work and school. Okay, we'll do the best we can. It should still be up on iTunes. Are we not? I think we are, Kevin, aren't we? Up on iTunes. I'll get straight to the point. He says, although our boys won the game, I have three nitpicks. Ooh, here we go. Number one, way too many penalties. We give up 160 yards. Absolutely. Agreed 110%. Two, in the first half, especially the first quarter, our defense was leaving receivers wide open. And that was something, as I just suggested, they did manage to correct at least somewhat. And number three, third down conversions. We had too many opportunities, continue the drive only to flop, give Minnesota the ball again. Ultimately, our defense made the adjustments and kicked butt with the punt and block punt in return for a touchdown and the interceptions. Also, this is my first time writing in, and I'm happy to have done so. Thanks. Thank you, Michael. All good points, all good nitpicks, all shared, I think, by others other than you. Yep. Marco from Mexico. John, my nitpicking for this week has to be Tom Brady not throwing to other receivers other than Gronk and Edelman. Tell me if I'm wrong, John, but there was a point in the game where I just decided to focus my attention to the other receivers like LaFell and Amendola, and I saw 3 to 4 plays, maybe more, that easily they were open, and even in a more perfect way than the target chosen by TB12 in that particular play. To be honest, it's kind of annoying to see these guys not having chances to see what they can do for the team. Your thoughts? Well, Marco, we've spent a little bit of time talking about that today. You know, your fears are not unfounded, but I would tell you again first that the game plan was to be physical and run the ball. And the second one is when you're in a tight situation and you know you need to get some yards, your first instinct is going to go to where you know you can rely on the guys. That's all I can tell you. Agreed. And as Eric Friends just told us, and as Jeff Howe from the Boston Herald told us in the first hour of the program today, agreed, the offense does need to be more versatile and does need to spread the ball around. And Brady does not need to get one-dimensional in his thought process. He's got to look off receivers and look to his secondary and tertiary receivers, because it did seem like he was locked onto number 11 quite a bit on Sunday. I will certainly not argue that point. But a lot of that is because of the way the game plan was, and because they only threw the ball 24, 25 times. And most of them were for short gains. They weren't down the field throws. Who's the short yardage receiver? That's all I can tell you. Debbie in Tennessee. If it wasn't Adrian Peterson, a famous NFL player who beat this child, or both children, would be these sports fans in Minnesota be so understanding and give him the benefit of the doubt? I agree with the governor of Minnesota. Peterson needs suspension and no pay. You know what? That's probably an interesting point, Debbie. If it wasn't a Viking player guilty, my guess would be that Vikings fans would be much more off with his head. You know, I guess I can understand that. I think Patriots fans would be the same way if a Patriot player, you know, were to be unfortunately involved in something like this. As far as suspension and no pay, see, I think it should be my whole issue with the NFL and not being aggressive enough in really policing this right now. And I think this is something that needs to be developed. And I'm hopeful that in this whole internal investigation of the whole schmear. And again, I opined about this, you know, in this week's View from Above, if you haven't read it yet. They need to get to the bottom of the story. They need to uncover everything. And once it's uncovered and all of the problems are addressed, then there needs to be definitive policies and probably, you know, levels of punishment depending on the crime that's committed. And in case, because players are in the public eye, it is probably unfair, getting back to one of my original points from earlier today when we opened up the show, it's probably unfair that, at least in the court of public opinion, in the court of sports, and right now, players are guilty until proven innocent. And that goes completely against everything that we preach in this country. We wouldn't want that treatment in the courts, but yet here we are, quick to, you know, pull the trigger, so to speak, on these players. So I think what needs to be done here to mitigate that stance from a player's perspective, and again, if a player's guilty, you do the crime, you do the time. It's that way universally. I understand that part of it. But in order to sort of take some of the sting out of it here, I think the universal policy probably needs to come about where whenever a player is accused of some sort of criminal element, you know, where their charges brought or an arrest made, or, you know, something egregious, even in the Ray Rice story, because, you know, he was never arrested, but he was, you know, given a court approved, you know, plan of recovery, if you will. I'm all for suspending with pay. Now, the pay is in case the player is innocent of whatever charge it may be. That's fair. The suspension is in case the player is guilty. And if the player is guilty, then that's fair. So I think a suspension with pay is called for in almost every instance. And I think that should almost be a universal a universal policy instigated by the NFL. Suspend him with pay. Let the process play itself out. If he's a nuisance to you, if you don't want to have to deal with questions about the players, then you suspend him and be gone with him, and then the team doesn't have to worry about it. He's not on the team. We're going to let due process take its course. And if it turns out that, you know, he is indeed innocent in the court, you know, in the actual courts, then we'll welcome him back. But if he's not, then he's gone. He's done. This way you immediately shove all of the, distractions away from the football team. It makes way too much sense. And I know that in the past, the league has said teams should make up their own minds. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. It's kind of like the United States of America saying individual states should have their own laws and their own policies, which they do. But in this instance, the NFL is a private entity. It's not a democracy like the United States of America. And because of that, the NFL does need sometimes to wield a heavy hand. And sometimes the NFL does need to say, this is policy. This is what we're doing. If you can't follow it, there are repercussions for your actions. That's just the way it is. And I think you'd find that with any private endeavor or any private business. It's our way or the highway. The NFL then now needs to say, this is our way, or take the highway. It's that simple. And I think that's what the NFL needs to do more of. I think they need to come down with hard and fast policies for just about every instance. And then all of this off-field stuff, or a lot of it, goes away. That's what I would do if I were commissioner for a day. Hashtag Rook for commissioner. I need that like I need a hole in my head. All right, Pete in Augusta, Maine. But thank you, Debbie, for the question. It's an excellent point and good topic. Pete in Augusta, Maine. Nitpick: Brady still think he's off. Understand the guy running the route is important. Nitpick two: Josh second half play calling. That's a good one, Pete, that we hadn't come up with yet today. I thought the second of play calling was abysmal. Abysmal. I mean, we got two field goals out of the offense in the second half. That's not going to beat too many teams much better than Minnesota. Running game, good to see. Defense stepping it up. Adrian Peterson, very much child abuse. Should he be playing? No. Should he or Rice be banned from the league? No. Pete, that's exactly along my thoughts here. Don't ban him yet. Suspend him. Absolutely. Pay him until, you know, due process takes its course. But I'm not sure that you need to go any more than that. Megan: John, I've been traveling, but I'm glad I'm able to listen to the playbook live again. I'm with you on the offense in that we need to give it a few more weeks. On Sunday, they wanted to run, as you said, and against Miami, well, when did Brady have time to throw in that second half? Does Brady look good at Gronk, or does Brady look at Gronk and Edelman a lot? Sure he does. But he's 80% in passing to Edelman. If he's open, well, why wouldn't he throw it to him? I also think health has a lot to do with the struggles. Gronk isn't 100%. Dobson wasn't there almost all of the preseason. I think the healthier those two get, the better this will be. One thing I will complain about is short yardage conversions. Why throw a long ball than a short pass to move the sticks? Thanks, John. Today's a great show. Megan: that's a great email. That's a good job out of Megan. She's touched on everything. Absolutely touched on everything. That's a great email. That was one of my other nitpicks, as a possible nitpick anyways. They had the short yardage, 3rd and 2, I think, in the third quarter, and they go downfield and overthrow Edelman, I think, was on the play. When, you know, they made an emphasis on running the football on Sunday, I think they could have picked up the 2 yards, probably kept the drive alive. I thought that was a little bit of an oversight in the play calling department, which is why that was a sort of a secondary nitpick for me on Sunday. Paul on Facebook says, John, for Nitpick Tuesday, hashtag Nitpick Tuesday. I think we need to really start working on that hashtag. What do you think, Kev? Nitpick Tuesday? Okay, he says yes. All right, so start flagging this now when you bring me questions on Facebook or Twitter especially. Hashtag Nitpick Tuesday. He says, today, let's start off with a league-wide one. especially after the flag fest that was Sunday Night Football. Please, can the officials leave the hankies at home next week and let the players play football? Our game was bad enough, but the Niners-Bears game was just ridiculous. Yeah, you know, week one, I don't think anybody really had any real difficulty with the way the officials let the players play the game, but we saw the reappearance, the reemergence of, hankies on the field ad nauseum this past week. I'm hoping that this is just a sort of a subtle reminder overall from the officials that, hey, we're calling these hands here, guys. I'm hoping that's the case. Again, we'll reserve judgment, I think, at least one more week on that, Paul. But it is a little bit of a sticking point right now. More specifically, he says, on the Patriots, I was surprised to see Revis covering Jennings. I'd have expected him to be on Patterson. In saying that, Logan Ryan did an admirable job covering Patterson, but I thought that he would be Revis's guy for the afternoon. I'm with you there, Paul. Again, that was one of my other secondary nitpicks. Why did he get Jennings as opposed to Patterson when Patterson clearly, physically, is the more explosive of the two players? Maybe they felt like, you know, with the backers and with the attention paid on Patterson by multiple players, that Jennings was the guy one-on-one that Revis should lock down and, again, make Minnesota more one-dimensional in terms of the people they can go to. Can't argue with the way the Patriots played it because it worked. Jennings was a non-factor. And really, Patterson wasn't much of a factor either. So it's pretty hard to argue the end result. My main nitpick is the offense. On paper, 30 points looks good, but 7 of those came from Chandler Jones's play on special teams and another 7 after McCourty returned a pick to the 1 yard line. We also have the fact that after the break, we managed just 2 field goals, and even that was 6 points more than we managed in the second half of week one. The offense bothers me. It starts with Thomas Edward Brady Jr. Way to throw in his whole name there. Amendola targeted once all day. Dobson had just 1 catch. I didn't see too many more thrown his way. I didn't hear LaFell mentioned either, so I don't think he got many targets. When we were winning Super Bowls, Brady's favorite receiver was the open guy. And I find it hard to believe that none of the guys I mentioned got open at all during the game. With Gronk not looking like Gronk, Brady has to spread the ball around more. Good stuff, Paul. Absolutely good stuff, and I think you're pretty much on the point there. Pretty much on point. Melvin has been hanging on in Tennessee. Melvin, thanks for hanging on. You're in the playbook.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, Melvin. How's it going today?
Hey. Good. Better than last week.
Yeah. Well, listen, yeah. We kind of sometimes, I realize on Nitpick Tuesdays, we sort of sometimes realize that, you know, we're missing the big fact that you did get a W, right?
Yeah. You know, we're okay with the W, but of course, the W's in January area, but we're okay.
Right.
Like I said, we're okay.
Right.
Where to start, John? Let me see. It's not, I always get some nitpicks, but I'll start with 2. Well, I'll just go with 2. And my number one, which is the least important of the 2, but if you work so hard with 30, so why are we throwing the shade? I'm so tired of seeing Tom Brady throw the ball long, and we know we're not able to throw the ball. I think it's been beat somewhat during this course of me listening, but I still want to reiterate that. Like, we can't throw the long ball. I think we've kind of established that. Then I look up, I see the long ball in there, and it's the other end. That's fine, but just come on now. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think he is a short yardage guy, but what use is anybody else? I know I'm not going to keep talking about that, but, you know, I just hate 3rd down and 2 and you throw a fade. I think that makes no sense, you know?
I thought that was a lousy play call. That was certainly one of my nitpicks. You know, when you've made it a point to, you know, shove the ball down an opponent's throat and then you go long like that on a fade route on a 3rd and 2, I thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah, it reminds me last year that Denver when they threw that long ball to Slater on the 3rd down. I wanted to say, I was like, wow, he is really, you know, not being creative with the, not to me, by throwing this fade. You know, like you just said, 1 in 12 chance of making this, of completing this pass.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we doing that?
Yeah.
And that was kind of a useful one. We already talked about that. But me, nitpicks, and I said this last week, and I said this last year, and I keep saying it until sometimes they get it right. Tackling. It's going to be sick now. I know we did a good job with the running back this week, but like I said, I mean, if that would have been Adrian Peterson, that would have been a different story. And just at times, just missed tackle.
Yep.
I've seen them push the guys back into the backfield, so they're doing a good job. But somebody's got to get free and make a tackle. I've seen a lot. It bothers me that I see a play that should be lost of three turns to plus seven. That will always, always, always bother me. That I think it was maybe a Ninkovich miss and somebody else whiffed him, and I think Wilfork and Mayo got him down. You know, got him down after one of his better runs when they got back there. After he got pushed back, he was able to manage 7 yards, which should have been a loss of three. But that was a recurring thing from last week.
Yeah.
When I felt like Marino, they did a good job of pushing the backfield. Somebody's got to get out the block and wrap him up.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you face the Mannings and people like that, a 2nd and 13 is a whole different ballgame than 2nd and 3 or whatever it is. Because they are licking their chops at a 2nd and 3. You know, you can kind of figure them out a little bit better at 2nd and 13. You need to make those tackles. Remember that? I know Dwight Howell was a good man. He had a clear sack one time and just whiffed him. I know that's me being picky.
Well, but that's, yes, you're right. That's okay. You're allowed to be picky on Tuesday.
I'm allowed
yes.
to see it. I'm
yes.
allowed to be picky.
You are.
You get a quarterback one time, it's early in the game, you get a clear shot on him, clean his nose. Hit him hard. I wanted to see, it was a clear shot on him, and he scrambled out of that for plus seven. I don't want to see this defense giving plays away. We guess what we do? We give plays away
mm-hmm.
sometimes, and especially during the early of the game. The momentum is on their side. It might have been the first drive. I don't know. It was one of those first early drives. Do you know how much of an impact a hit like that or a strip sack, something like, you know, that changes the momentum of games. Those turnovers, stuff like that, which you could have had another one.
Mm-hmm.
Be nitpicky.
Yep.
Clean, you know, give him, you know, take him down. Let him know that you're not going to be comfortable in this pocket all day. We're watching. So I want to see that start to be developed because, you know, and he got a shot on him later on during the game, and he played well. I'm not saying that he didn't, but if I'm being nitpicky, during those shots when you probably had the nicest shot you had on him. Just a good sack, just a good setting the tone type play
mm-hmm.
that came earlier than the McCourty pick or whatever. You got to take those shots. We got to let these people, you know, we got to let people know because I'm maybe just defensively, you have to let, you have to make them uncomfortable. I think that's the thing that throughout the year, we talked about the pressure situation and we, you know, Manning in the AFC Championship game probably didn't even have to wash his jersey. We've got to get some pressure back there and let people know and be disruptive.
Yeah.
I think that's the one thing I want to see throughout the year, just them be disruptive and get it, you know, once you get a chance to make a tackle on people for a loss of three, get them down. Somebody needs to get off the block and get them down, but overall, I thought the game was, you know, the game was good. Like I said, I was not comfortable. It felt like a relapse of the Dolphins game, because that could be, you know, a 17-10 versus 24-7 is totally two different games.
Mm-hmm.
So we needed that play by Chandler Jones on special teams. But
the play by Jones, I think, cannot be underscored enough. That provided life where we were starting to get some real, you know, more abundant activity there. I mean, it had gone down to a point where, you know, they were about ready to lull themselves to sleep, and the Vikings were about ready to pounce. That I thought that play served to really spark and get that team over the hump.
Right. So, that's good. I'm not going to discredit that, but I just want to see. What could I say? I would like to see. I still think, unfortunately, I still see an offense that's finding themselves, but I will state the positive. I thought they did a good job running the ball. I saw in some plays Ridley. I think on that third down at one time, and you can agree with me, John, or disagree with whichever one, but I think on that third down that when the line was getting pushed back, when he got through the hole, he was down low at first, but then he thought he was clear, so he kind of raised up a little bit. And that gave himself a lot of chest there, and that's how he got popped.
Right.
You remember that? Yeah, I think that's my analysis of that play went. But stuff like that, other than that, a couple plays he ran out, but other than that, I thought he really did really well. I thought there was a couple plays where people in the backfield, he made one guy miss, and then kind of did what I was talking about. Somebody, people in the backfield, and he made some guys miss and got up the field, and I saw him holding on to the ball with two hands. I didn't know who that was. It was glorious, even really. Thank goodness. So I liked it. I like to see them running the ball with a little bit more fluency. Like they look fluent. Now, once the passing game gets going, you know, maybe everything can get to going like normal. But overall from the game, I was happy. They need to improve, of course. I told Nick Chester that I thought they were going to get to about 30 or 40 points, and they should have if they would have did something in the second half, to be honest. They got to 30 with a lot of help. They should have 50 points out there.
No doubt in my mind that they could have and should have cracked 40.
Right. So they should have did better than that. But I'm all right. Like I said, welcome to the Raiders. And I'm going to keep listening to your show.
Thanks, buddy.
Keep it up.
All right, Melvin, way to go. Good stuff by Melvin. And, Melvin, thanks again for hanging on. Kept him on hold for quite a while on that one. Let me see if I got a couple of others here. Johnny in New Mexico writes this on email. He says, why not remove Brady with 7 minutes left in the game to Garoppolo, give him some snaps? That's a great nitpick, Johnny. And one that nobody has mentioned yet today. And that was one of those nitpicks that I actually thought about earlier today. And then I heard a couple of local guys talk about it on the radio this morning. And I'm glad you brought it up again here because I wanted to get that in today and had forgotten about it until you just sent the email. I understand, again, why perhaps Brady was not pulled from there, even though you're clearly in control of things. You're up 30-7. There was no real need to keep Tom Brady in the game. And yeah, it would have been a good chance to get Garoppolo some snaps because frankly, he hasn't yet had a regular season snap. The preseason, as we all know, really doesn't mean a thing. And yeah, what happens if Brady does go down? You need to have somebody who's got, you know, at least some sort of battle testedness about him in there. It would have been a great opportunity, great chance for him to do that. And yet the reason that he was not was because of the aforementioned, as we've been talking about some of our nitpicks today, the aforementioned struggles on offense. Tom himself after the game, not a happy camper with the way the offense played overall. That's why he didn't come out of the game. He wants a chance to continue to work on these problems, and the coaching staff feels likewise. That these are issues that are probably best if he, you know, worked out if he does not come out. To me, that's the biggest reason why. And it has to be the only reason why Brady didn't come out of a game that was already decided with 7 minutes to go. Because the offense still needs work, and I think we're all in agreement here today. The offense still needs work. Good nitpick, Johnny. Don in Marietta, Georgia says, John, domestic violence is terrible, needs to be aggressively prosecuted. When did a man's employment become dependent on public perception of his choices of disciplining of his children? How far society has devolved when America holds a man's feet to the fire over spanking his children and not a word is said about the fact that he has kids with multiple women he never married. A much greater mark against society is that the stuff with what the public latches onto when ISIS intimates they already have operatives here in America and high-placed bureaucrats openly accusing the State Department of destroying documents of national record. Well, you make some interesting points there, Donald. Look, we all know that there's nobody that's going to tell you domestic violence is good because it's not. It serves no purpose. It's ridiculous. People are hurt. It's harmful. It leads to the deterioration of society. It leads to lawlessness. It leads to a lot of things that are, none of them are good. None of them. Aggressively prosecuted, absolutely. But, you know, this country was founded well over 200 years ago on the principle of innocence until proven guilty. And if we stray from that, I fear that we end up with a lynch mob mentality, which is something you don't really want to have. And frankly, Twitter is that in social media. There's very much a lynch mob mentality within social media, Twitter and Facebook, particularly. And so what we need to remember is that people are not and should not be decided either guilty or innocent via social media. We need to continue to let the processes that have put us where we are now, as still the greatest country on this planet, we need to let the processes play themselves out.
I had a quick take for you, John.
Shoot.
And it was kind of rolling around in my head watching the game last night, the Monday Night Football game, because on Sundays we're so busy with, you know, the Patriots, and I got the pre- and the post-game show and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I did – I went to my phone, and I grabbed the calculator function on my phone, and I said, okay, there's 32 teams in this league, and each team has 53 guys on their roster,
mm-hmm.
plus now 10 practice squad players, which was upped this year. So if you do the math, just in players alone, there's over 1,700 football players that play professional football in this country, okay? Now, I'm not making any excuses for anybody, but if you take a large population of 1,700 males, and there's maybe two or three or four or five even, maybe 10, just real bad guys that do bad things to kids or women or whatever, it still doesn't ruin the sport for me, and the whole, you know, soccer mom central, like, storming NFL headquarters with pitchforks and torches ready to, you know, fire Roger Goodell and burn the NFL. I mean, I don't really get it. I think you could look at a variety of different professions and people and walks of life and take 1,700 or 1,800 or 2,000 pipe fitters or plumbers or electricians or cooks or teachers, you know, there's bad teachers we hear about on the news, and they're the last people you would expect. So mm-hmm. I'm not a football player, but you and I work for an NFL team, and I don't know. It just kind of rubs me the wrong way when all of us are painted with this broad brush, when you hear everyone come up to you on the street and ask, well, what do you think about Ray Rice? What do you think about – to be honest, I think it's terrible, but it really has nothing to do with me, and I don't think that it reflects poorly on me working for an NFL team because it has nothing to do with me. So I just kind of feel like you're painting this whole group of people, you know, 1,800 players and all the staff and front office and league headquarters and all the NFL teams with this giant broad brush because of 10 knuckleheads. And 10 is probably being generous. We know of a couple knuckleheads of this past week. There's probably more we don't know about. But I doubt there's 500 knuckleheads.
This is why, Kevin, and it's a very good point that you make. This is why we say, and I said last week, sports is a microcosm of society. It is, it always will be, always has been. So we don't need to jump off the deep end, so to speak, here, and over-prosecute or be overly aggressive in punishment. What we need to do is make sure that those who offend are held to the standards of life. To the standards by which the rules and the laws of life that we set ourselves. We're the biggest hypocrites of all if we let them go, because it's our rules that we made that they're breaking. So we need to hold them to our rules and our standards for living. And if we don't, then shame on all of us. Yeah, it's very much a, you know, you don't let one or two bad apples spoil the whole bunch. You really don't. And that's why I continue to follow the NFL and watch the NFL. And,
rubs me the
you know,
wrong way.
These guys that I'm listening to on the local radio here saying, oh, I'm giving up Red Zone this year. I'm not paying for Red Zone. It's my protest against the NFL. Well, that's stupid.
And that's the,
that's just dumb.
And if they want to do that, God
you want to do
them.
That, God, yeah,
but
exactly.
But if you can just flip off something that you've loved and cared about and that entertains
then
you.
Then I absolutely question your overall love and desire to follow that. I mean, you weren't that interested in it to begin with.
I don't think that's a rational.
You think that that's really going to keep the NFL?
No, it's
you
not
know from
keep
from no, it's not going to mean
the
anything.
The whole I'm going to pick up my ball and go home is not a mentality that I've ever subscribed to.
No, me either.
And it pisses me off a little to all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, like you see these people that you've never heard of and these organizations you've never heard of, and it's like, okay, I get it. We have a problem. The league has a problem. And did they handle either situation, or did each team that had those, you know, players on it handle it perfectly? Absolutely not.
But
let that ruin it, all the charity and all the other stuff that we've done over the past 50, 60 years.
Of course.
It's just ludicrous.
Of course. What would have been better served? The local talk show host that I heard say that he's ditching Red Zone because of the NFL's behavior. And again, he's painting the broad brush that you speak of there, Kevin. What would have been better served is, throw down your headphones, turn off your microphone, and walk out of the studio on Patriots Monday. That would have been a message. And don't get paid. by the station that pays you to talk football on that day. You want to make a statement? There's your statement. Anything short of that is just lip service, self-serving crap.
Yeah, it seems like all of a sudden, you know, due to this stuff, there's a lot of blowhards just spewing nonsense, and they want to seem like they're on this moral high ground. And it's like, I bet if I did a little,
if I did a little digging
into your background, sir, I'm sure it's not everybody's
on the same moral high ground. Just because you're saying, oh, this is bad. Oh, Adrian Peterson's bad. Oh, Ray Rice is bad. Doesn't make you any more special than anybody else. We know it's bad. We know it's bad. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah. I think a lot of these guys live in glass houses.
Of course they do. And I'm not throwing rocks.
Of course they do. I've never, you know who I'm talking about. Yeah. But I've never hit.
Because it happened on this very channel on Monday.
Probably sitting from that chair.
Yes. Yeah.
But I've never hit a woman or hit a child, and I don't intend to.
No, nor will I.
But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I've never done anything wrong and that I haven't gotten a fist fight or I haven't called somebody a bad name or I haven't done something that I'm not proud of, because we all have.
Yeah.
And now, to what degree that stacks up in comparison to Adrian Peterson or Ray Rice, you know, that's up for every individual person to decide. But I'm not going to sit here, you know, I'm not going to certainly not condone their behavior, but I'm not going to sit here and throw rocks at people and paint the league in this, like, evil color for, you know, maybe two, three, maybe, to be generous, 10 knuckleheads. I'm not going to, I refuse to let that very small minority population, whether it be, you know, these guys in the NFL are, you know, people that kind of affect other things that I like to do in my life. I'm not going to let the 1% affect my happiness and the way that I enjoy living my life. So I think that if people would just kind of look at it from that perspective, I know I would appreciate it, because I get sick of hearing all these people come out of nowhere that you've never heard of or never even, you know, heard an opinion from. And all of a sudden they're this, like, it's like, who made you in charge, kind of, you know?
Yeah. Good points, Kev. Really good points. Thanks for bringing it up. Let me end up with a couple of tweets here, fired off by those of you who hit me up at JR Broadcaster on Twitter. Felipe, or Felipe, from Brazil. Great to have you, Felipe. He says, I know it sounds silly, but you have no idea how much it meant to me for have you replying to my message. Thanks, man. He says, I'm a big fan from Brazil here. I'm a Pat's Playbook addict. Yeah! All right. That's what we need. We need more Pat's Playbook addicts. Love it. Other kind of addicts we probably don't need as much of, right? Okay. Ooh, let me get back to the top of the list here, because I know I had a couple of others here. Cav says, a late nitpick, Brady, if he's freezing out the wide receivers not named Edelman and BB for not doing what's best for the team and talking to TB. Okay. I don't think he's necessarily freezing out the other wide receivers that we talked about, Cav. Again, I think part of it was the game plan from this last week. And Bill, for not doing what's best for the team. Bill is always going to do what he thinks is best for the team. It may not be what you think is best for the team, but he's always going to do what he thinks is best for the team. Sometimes that's a big difference. And then William says, can the Patriots maintain that defensive performance, especially against a good team like Seattle or Denver? Great question, William. Probably won't know until we get a chance to play Denver in the first part of November. But at least, based on what we saw against Miami, it was a step in the right direction against a Minnesota team that was clearly missing a very large part of its offensive weaponry in Adrian Peterson on Sunday. So now the only thing you can do is take another step toward completing that picture and continue the process with the Oakland Raiders here for the home opener this next Sunday. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Playbook. Thanks again to Eric Friends from Patriots.com, or excuse me, from Boston.com for joining us. You can follow him, Eric, at Eric Friends, E-R-I-K-F-R-E-N-Z. From Boston.com, he covers the AFC East, and also to Jeff Howe from BostonHerald.com for joining us in the opening hour today. You can follow him on Twitter, at Jeff P. Howe. And Eric, I believe, is going to join us just about every week to sort of recap the previous week's game,
which is
really cool. He's a great kid. He's very bright, very intelligent. You remember that this show spawned another great kid who's gone off to other things, great, from the old four-letter network. I'm talking about Field Yates. right? We used to have him in here all the time a couple of years ago when he was a nobody. And now
look up, he's on TV every day.
I know. And now you look up, he's up on, you know, as an NFL insider on ESPN. It all started in the playbook, baby. That's what I'm trying to say here. All started in the playbook. All right, back to the game planning and a turn of the page toward the Oakland Raiders. How many times are you going to hear it said that way this week? That'll be tomorrow, same patch time, same patch channel, beginning at 2 o'clock Eastern time. Fantasy guys, they're coming up next right here on Patriots.com Radio.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2.